Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. Today is October the 14th, 2008, and we have a wonderful Learn at Lunch presentation for you, Work as a Heroic Journey. I am Dr. Rosalie Josephson. I work for the Faculty and Staff Assistance Program, and we are delighted to be able to put on today's presentation, starring Marion Moss Hubbard, Ph.D. Dr. Hubbard is a transpersonal business consultant who specializes in the dynamics of workplace change. And those of us at UCSD know how ubiquitous change is here. She has over 20 years of experience working with individuals and organizations to help move them through their process of change with greater clarity and ease. She has a master's and PhD in transpersonal psychology from the International University of Professional Studies. Now, Dr. Hubbard has written a number of books. One of them is Work as a Heroic Journey, and that, of course, is going to be the topic of today's talk. She has also written a new booklet about workplace heroism, and in that series she has Messengers of Wisdom, 10 ways people you work with can evolve your heroic character. And next she has Removing Your Mask, which is about ending victimization. It is my pleasure, and please let's give a warm welcome to Marion Moss Hubbard.
Seeing you today. It's really great to be here with you, and I know how much change is going on right now in the world in general, and how much change is probably going on for you here at UCSD. And so I want to acknowledge that those of you who are tuning in, I know, have such a vested interest in doing an effectively moving through change, because obviously we all know change is happening. So one of the things that I would like to do is talk first a little bit with those who are here in the audience to give me a little bit of feedback about what some of your own challenges with change have been. Because I know that change can be very challenging, and it's how it affects you personally that makes all the difference in the world. So is anyone willing to share a little bit about how change has affected them personally? Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's challenging,
mm-hmm.
and it usually turns out for the best.
That's great. So your experience has been a positive one then, it sounds like. Great. Does anyone else like to share how they have experienced change in their work environment? Has anybody had reorganizations that they have had to go through, which is another, anyone else with reorganization? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess initially I was a little, before this person even came on board, in my mind I started to get defensive and how I would support, mm-hmm. you know, how I was going to have to support my position and how I looked at how mm-hmm. it should be done, et cetera.
And I kind of took that mindset right from mm-hmm. the get-go that I was going to somehow have to defend my position and what I do, and he or she would come in to try to change what I was doing. That's mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought that, mm-hmm. but that's what I did. And someone reminded me, you know, of the fact that the person hadn't even been on board. Maybe I should just wait and see. And mm-hmm. sure enough, my fears were all unfounded because this person was totally supportive and open to what we were doing and wanted to find out how he could help or enhance our department. So it was very positive, although I initially didn't process it as being so. I thought it was going to be negative. It didn't turn out to be what I thought it would be. So
one of the stressors, it sounds like, for you was the unknown and not knowing whether it was going to be a positive or negative experience, right? Okay, that's great. Anyone else? Well, I want to just point out that one of the things that can, you know, sometimes be very stressful about change is the very thing we're talking about. It's that fear of the unknown, because you don't know what directions things will go. And because it's somewhere you work, you know, so many hours a day, it can affect you so dramatically if you have a very good working situation or if you don't. So this is why I know change, especially in the workplace, can be such a challenge to deal with. So what we are here to talk about today is ways that you can effectively move through change, can develop new skills that will help you to cope with change, to not only just cope with it, but really make the most of it and make it so that you feel really revitalized by it, you feel energized by it, that you feel excited about the opportunities for change that change can bring about. And, you know, as we're hearing all this negativity in the news right now, it can be especially challenging to continue to deal with change on a positive basis. But that's what I'm suggesting here today, that I'm hoping that this will help you with, is to help you on a personal level to help you deal effectively with change, even no matter what else is going around you. It'd be sort of like you standing in the eye of the hurricane, and everything else may be going around you, but you are able to keep a calm center and clear about what you need to do and where you need to go, and just go with the flow with it. So that's sort of one of the goals on a personal level. And then the other thing that it will help you to do is to actually deal with your workplace more effectively with the people that you work with. And that's something that I think that as we're moving through change and seeing how things, why my slide is not moving, how it applies to your personal life and then the work teams that you work with and then the organization as a whole. Because while you're making change, everybody else is making change. It's all dynamic. And the people that you may work next to may have a very different perception about it. Has anybody had people they work with who have a very negative outlook on anything that happens? Can be real naysayers? Yes. That can be a very stressful situation if you're having to deal with people who are constantly negative around you, to not let it wear off on you. So some of this is about helping you to cope with the other people in the way that you have to deal with the other people around you in the work setting. And then looking at it as the organization as a whole, because as you're making change and the group is making, your work group is making a change, the organization as a whole is in a dynamic flux, and you have to interact with what's going on and go with it. So and also influence the organization. How you can be effectively an influencer and a change agent is also what we're here to talk about today. So one of the things that I also want to focus on first is to talk a little bit about the types of change. And a lot of people think of, you know, there's like a one-size-fits-all, and that, you know, dealing with change is like you deal with change and that's you deal with all kinds of change in the same way. And what I want to offer you is that there are different kinds of change, and you have to respond to things in a different way depending upon what the situation is. And the three types of change that are really the primary areas are, one is developmental, the other one is transitional, and then we have transformational change. We'll be focusing a lot today on transformational change, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the differences so we can just be on the same page, we can be on the same playing field. With developmental change, we're talking about an improvement of what is. It's something that already exists, and you're simply kind of staying within the same box. You have the same basic context that you have always had, but you are somehow adapting in a new way. An example of that would be you are learning a computer program. I mean, you've learned a computer program. Maybe you know Word, you know Excel, and you need to further your skills, so you go take additional courses to become more savvy at those particular programs. Or even that you are doing word processing and you need to learn a new word processing program. You're still staying within the same parameters of what you have been doing, but you are making developmental change, and you're furthering your own skills in that particular domain of experience. So that would be one kind of type of change. Another type of change would be the transitional change when you're moving from an old state to a new state, and then you're going to know that you have a transition point in between. And this, an example of this would be if you are going to go to college. You know, you're in high school. You know that you're going to be transitioning, going through college. It's going to be a transition time. Many people think that they're going to come out of it on the other side and be finished. And there's always the perpetual students and people who love to continue to learn and stay a student. But the people who, you know, you come out in a new state on the other side is the point. So another example that an organization would go through in a change process would be an organization is changing to a whole new mailing system. Like we in the when I was working with the city of San Diego, we went from working in an Outlook to, I mean, working in GroupWise to Outlook. Well, you had a change. It was a kind of a rough period in there where everybody had to go through a transition point. And then we got to the other side of it. You know, it's like it's hard while you're doing it, and everybody hates it and grouses about it, and it's kind of cuts into your productivity. But then you get out on the other side of it, and then after you do it for a while, people kind of forget what happened before, or it's not as painful, at least, because you've gotten on the other side of that change, and you know what you're doing. Another example would just be people who are learning to drive a car. You know, if you're driving a car, you don't know in the beginning. You remember how when you first started driving, you had to, like, pay attention to everything? And now we've got people talking on cell phones and putting on their makeup and doing everything else at the same time. But it gets to the point that some of the things start to become automatic pilot. And when they're not automatic pilot, that's sometimes the point that it can be very stressful, because you have to think about every little thing, and that's very frustrating because you don't want to have to think about those little minor things. You want to be able to focus your attention on what your other work is. So being able to know that you have a transitory state that's going from one place to another can sometimes be helpful, because if you know that it's going to be a frustration, but it's only an interim frustration, then that can help you deal with it, knowing that it's going to be over soon. And once you get on, you know, the more that you're willing to learn and not resist the change, the easier that the process will be for you. And I know some people who have had a very difficult time, like, learning computers. You know, they didn't grow up in needing to know computers. They don't really have any interest in it. And suddenly they're thrust into a job situation where they have to be computer savvy. And it's very stressful for them sometimes because they're resisting and trying to, not only just the mere frustration of just having to learn it, but resisting saying, I don't really want to have to learn it. And so sometimes if you can just embrace the change, it makes it easier for you to deal with it and move through it. So then there's the third type of change, which we're going to be focusing on mostly here today, and that's transformational change. And see if this sounds familiar in any way to you. There's like the birth of a, you know, something, it kind of, you get to a point, you know, you grow through a process, like as an organization. An organization is founded. They kind of go through this growing process. They get to a certain point. There's sort of a success plateau where you feel kind of a measure of comfort. You feel everything's kind of in the groove. And then all of a sudden, something can happen, and things just kind of crash. It goes into chaos. Things deteriorate into chaos. Everybody's frustrated. Nobody knows the right answer. And you can't figure it. Nobody's quite sure where you're going to go exactly. But then if you keep on working it through, then you can come out the other side. There's sort of, if you get through wake-up calls that kind of tell you, ah, here's a great aha. If you pay attention to the things that are indicators to you of what you need to do next, then you can move to a new place. But it's a collective new place. It's a place that you haven't ever necessarily been before. And so you don't know where you're going. It's sort of like being on that trapeze and having to let go into the unknown and then grab on the other side. But you don't know for sure what's on that other side, so it can be very stressful. Anybody remember seeing the Indiana Jones, the one, is the Temple of Doom, I think it was the name of that movie, where he had, no, it was the Chalice, the one where he goes in looking for the chalice, and he has to step into the unknown across a big chasm, and he has to step hoping and trusting the process that there is a bridge there that's an invisible bridge. And so that's what a lot of this is learning how to help you cross that invisible bridge. So you're emerging into a new state, which nobody knows what it's going to be. You don't know. Nobody else knows what it's going to be. And then there's a time period. The time period of transition is unknown. We're in transitional change. Usually you can say, okay, you know, on X date, we're going to go live with this new product. We figure in 6 months, we'll be up to speed. Everybody will be up to speed. In transformational change, you can't say concretely, this is an end point that is going to be an end, and I can say a particular date and time. So that also in itself can be very stressful for people because you want to say, okay, enough already, enough change, let's stop, let's not do any more change. And with transformational change, you have to keep going because that you can't go back. You know, you've already gone through this process of a death in a certain way, and to have it, the organization or yourself, be reborn in a different way to become new, renewed, you have to go through the process. And a lot of people will sort of try to stop the process in midstream and try to backtrack, and then it actually sets you back. So if you can kind of realize that when you're moving through change of this kind of magnitude, that it's the only way to go is to go forward and to do what you feel dynamically called to do as the next step, collectively or individually, that can help you get there. Have any people see the stock market and what's happened in the last few weeks? I mean, I think this is a perfect example of transformational change that we are undergoing as a whole society. Nobody knows exactly where we're going next. There's a total paradigm shift that can happen from this process and will happen because we can't ever go back to the not knowing. You can't ever move back to being in the former place because it's already gone. And you can't step back into it. And you'll see people try to do that. They try to reel it back to the old way. And there are certainly elements of the past that you want to bring forward and that you want to, you know, use your wisdom to move forward in that process. But you can't make it go back, and it never will. It won't go back to that place before. Yes, Roseanne. I mean, Rosalie.
Comments that I had was how many people I've spoken to in the last 2 weeks mm-hmm. who have asked, how long is this going to take? Will it take 2 years? Mm-hmm. Will it take 1 year? Mm-hmm. And I think that what you mentioned earlier mm-hmm. speaks to that need to define how long it will take,
right.
And yet the time period is not easily controlled.
Right. Exactly. And I think that is a challenge for anyone who is in a leadership role shepherding things through transformational change. You can have some ideas about how you would like it to go, and you also have to be flexible enough to adapt to what needs to happen. And so that's part of the challenge, is giving people hope that there will be a resolution and that there will be a next phase and that you will get through it. And also being cognizant of the fact that you have to be able to make decisions in the moment that are the right decision that will take you where you need to go, and you can't always know what that is because it's a collective group that's helping decide where you're going to go. There's a collective effort involved in that process. So that's exactly one of the things that can be very challenging, because people want to know, okay, when is this going to be over with? And you can't exactly say. So that's a very good point that you bring up. So one of the things that is a great benefit of the heroic journey is that it creates a great context for going through change. And it's like we all go through change. Everybody does, at both a personal level and a collective level. And, you know, if everybody's life is a heroic journey, then that helps us to feel like we are putting the pieces that can be sometimes feel very fragmented. I don't know about you, but it's like for me sometimes in a work day, I'll have all these things that I've got to do in various areas. I know I've got a lot of things on my to-do list, and things come up. You have to set that aside. You have to do something totally different. Somebody calls with a deadline. You have things you have to do, and sometimes you're just trying to check things off your to-do list and get through your list. But how do you deal with stepping back and thinking about it in a different way, so that when you do that to-do list, you're doing it meaningfully, so that it has purpose, so that you feel like what you're doing on a day-to-day basis helps you get where you need to go? Because a lot of times people will say to me, you know, I feel like I did all this stuff and it was useless. It didn't get me where I needed to go, because what they were doing was checking things off a list or doing something, you know, whatever, you know, being reactive to things, and they didn't have a chance to step back and be responsive so that it could help them direct their activity and direct their thinking process about where they needed to go next. So this is one of the challenges that I think, and one of the benefits of the heroic journey is that as we go through those challenges, it helps us to know where we need to go. And as I said a little bit ago, it also helps us bridge from the, there's always a gap in the known place where we have been to the unknown place. And what I think is so valuable about this is that it helps give you a bridge. Whereas if you don't have this this whole heroic journey context, you can think that it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to make this leap and I'm just going to fall flat on my face, or we're going to make some decision and it's going to be horrendous and it's going to be the wrong decision and it's just going to be horrible. And then people kind of do this whole thing where they kind of spin off into the, you know, the horribles. What if I make a mistake? What if I get fired? What if I, you know, I remember I had one friend who said, if I don't make the right decision here, then somebody's going, then my boss is going to fire me. I'm then going to lose my house. My husband's going to leave me. I'm going to be homeless, and I'm going to be living on the street. Well, you know, I mean, you can go that direction with your thinking process, but does that really help you? And it also is usually not true. We get into these, you know, kind of this exaggerated sense of horribleness when it really sometimes is not that bad. And if we start realizing that each step that we're taking is taking the next step on that bridge across things, then it helps us to realize we're building the bridge as we go. And that's something that a lot of people aren't very comfortable with. But if you're a good change agent and you're dealing with transformational change, you become more resilient at being able to build the bridge as you go. The next benefit is that it helps you trust that you have your own, what I call heroic infrastructure, that helps you be able to respond and take action and do whatever you need to do no matter what the outside circumstances. And like when I was talking about earlier about, you know, being in the eye of the hurricane, part of how you were able to do that, if you were really focused around the heroic journey and having that as your context for change, is that while other people are getting whipped up in the emotional frenzy of the moment and of what is happening to them, then they just get, you know, freaked out. And if you are feel, and also their outside world, it's like if their outside world isn't perfect around them, then they totally feel like a mess internally and don't have any sense of direction, internal direction about what to do. It's as if I say it's like an exoskeleton, you know, that we have like an outside shell. And if that outside shell gets pummeled in any way, changed in any way, then it makes it much harder for us to be able to move forward and to know how to operate, because it's like our whole reality has shifted. But if your reality is an internal reality and you're responding from internally, then when things happen, then you say, okay, new situation. I hadn't thought of that before. Oh, now that's an opportunity. And you'll see opportunities where other people will see only walls and only barriers. So if you're feeling like you're clear and internally, it also gives you a sense of peace and calm that helps take you through the change process more effectively. Because we all know if you're feeling more centered and grounded and calm, how much better do you do and when you're dealing with experiences than when you're kind of freaked out and you're feeling overworked, overwrought, and you just don't know how to deal with it. So this is another way that it can help you move through change. The other thing that's really another benefit is that it helps you to deal with, to reframe your experiences from feeling like a victim of circumstances to actually being someone who is in charge of your own life, and you have your own perception and your own direction in life. And I remember there was a Steve Martin movie, and I cannot remember the name of it. He was kind of a nervous father. Oh, it was Parenthood. That's the name of it. And his wife, Meredith Steenburgen, what's her name? She was his wife, and she was always kind of, you know, she was kind of a go-with-the-flow kind of person, and he was always a nervous Nelly about everything that happened. And at some point in the movie, kind of late in the movie, he had a conversation with her grandmother and said, the grandmother says, oh, you know, life is like a roller coaster, and some people get on a roller coaster and they get really freaked out, and then other people get on the roller coaster and they just have a great time. And he was like, well, you know, I can't ride the roller coaster, like, you know, have a great time. And then he has to deal with the consequences of something where his son wrecks things in the, you know, on stage, and everything falls apart. And he looks over, and his wife is just laughing. She's having a great time. And he decides to just sort of go with it. It's like, yeah, it's okay. The kid, you know, so the kid flubbed up, and the whole, you know, stage was messed up. Big deal. You know, it's like, see, I see that with people in their weddings. You know, it's like they get all freaked out. It's got to be exactly perfect. And if anything is not perfect, then it wrecks the whole wedding for them. And, you know, we see that in the workplace a lot of times, too. You know, people will say, who are very, are real control freaks. I don't know if you've worked with, has anybody worked with a control freak? Yeah. You know, then you know that it's like if everything's not really perfect, you got everything dotted, T's crossed and I's dotted, then it's like it can't, you know, you've got to just pay attention to those details. Well, it's really good to pay attention to details, but it's also another thing to just be so freaked out if it doesn't work out that you can't adapt to change. So this is a way that you can kind of reframe your experiences. And I think you'll see, if you start thinking of this differently, go back and start looking around you and see how many people feel like they're victims of circumstances and are constant victims. I remember one time when I was up in Seattle working, I was working with a 12-step group. And I was at a conference for people who were going through the 12-step process. And one woman in there, we were talking about workplace issues, and she said, well, I've had 7 bad bosses in a row. They've all been bad. And I have to keep leaving because I keep getting the same scenario over and over and over again. It's like, well, hello, did you think maybe if you're getting the same scenario over and over again, maybe there's something you need to learn? Maybe there's something in the way that you're perceiving things or dealing with people that might be part of the challenge? So, you know, sometimes people can see that and other people can't see it. So if you're one of the people who sees as the people that you are working with as they may be challenging, and it's like I know for myself, if I encounter somebody who is really challenging to me, I ask myself questions. It's like, is this something I need to learn? Is there something that person's either mirroring for me? Is there something about that person that is irritating to me that's maybe something in myself that I'm not willing to own? Is there something, maybe I need to learn how to be more patient, more articulate, whatever it is, there's something that person can offer to me as what I call a messenger of wisdom to help me see things in a different way and to interact with people in a different way so I'm no longer the victim who's being taken advantage of or hurt all the time. So that's another way that people can really benefit. An additional way that you can look at it differently is it benefits you from, it helps you to see how to take right action. Because as we move forward and having to build the bridges as we go, how do you know if you're making a right decision or a wrong decision? Sometimes there's no right and wrong decision. I mean, sometimes it isn't that clear. And it is only clear on hindsight. And so sometimes we have to just trust our inner wisdom to tell us that we are making the right decision to move forward. And if you are feeling more clear about your thought process and you're feeling more calm and peaceful, it makes it much easier to make wise decisions than it does if you're not having a good sense of yourself, much less what's going on around you. So this is a way to help you sometimes be able to step back. And in times where it is great difficulty, you know, go take the walk around the block or go out to a coffee break or get away and give yourself time to think and breathe. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes like in the morning when I'm getting ready for work, I'll suddenly have that stroke of brilliance that it's like, oh, that's how I need to deal with something, or that's the answer to my question. And I wasn't really concentrating on focusing on it. Sometimes what you have to do is step back and let go and let it sort of mull over in your mind and just kind of bubble up to the surface for your right answer. And then you'll know sometimes what the right answer is and you'll know how to move forward. And one of the things that I see oftentimes is when you understand things in terms of transformational change, and if you know that that's the process you're going through, while other people are sort of gnashing over, oh my gosh, I have no clue what to do, and it's just, you know, I can't make a decision, and they get stymied. Sometimes they feel like deer in the headlights. You know, you get that people that just, you know, freeze up. I've seen that with leaders. A whole room full of leaders who are supposed to be making decisions to move forward, and nobody could make a decision. Well, if nobody's making a decision, that's a decision. You know, things happen as change continues to happen. So if this helps you to then be able to stop and really tune in internally, check with other people, kind of get some feedback, make some decision-making from a place of wisdom rather than having to make it in a way that's sometimes not necessarily as well thought out or even doesn't even feel right. Sometimes you really have to trust your intuition, too. If you really aren't clear in your mind about what's going on, sometimes you have to just kind of really say, what does my gut tell me that I need to do? And that'll give you an answer. So it helps you to actually be able to make wiser decisions. The other thing is that it can help you to realize that as you're working through your own process of change, the organization is doing its process of change, other people are changing, you're all sort of bumping and interacting with one another, and it helps you to realize that if you start seeing it as a collective, if you work with other people and they start understanding it's a heroic journey too, that it can really help you as an organization to move through that process of change more effectively, because you can see how each person contributes and each person's personal journey is interacting with the whole, and that improves the process. So we'll be talking a little bit about that and more through this. But what I first want to do is kind of give you, I've given you some of the benefits of the context. I want to give you some of the details about what this context is, because and a lot of what my work is based off of the work of Joseph Campbell, who was the great mythologist. He wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces and many other books. I don't know how many of you may have seen him, the Bill Moyer series that was The Power of Myth. That was back in the late 80s. And at the time when that first came out, I was fascinated, and I listened over and over again. We had it taped, and so there were like six segments in the series, and I listened to them over and over and over again. They just had so much meaning to me, but I didn't think about it in terms of how it applied to my work and how it really, I mean, it was more still in a thought process. It wasn't really anchored internally in an experiential level for me. But one of the things that I have come to know over the time is how valuable what Joseph Campbell said. And he talked about that no matter what culture across the whole world, there's always heroes and heroines. And what he did is he looked at what the similarities were throughout all the different cultures. And he found that there were stages of the heroic journey that everyone must go through to go through the change process effectively. And, you know, just even going through the birthing process, he talked about that as little beings being born. We go through a huge amount of, it's a heroic journey in and of itself to be born as human beings. You know, motherhood, fatherhood is a huge heroic journey in and of itself, because you're constantly having to, as soon as you have given birth, you have to let go. You're constantly letting go at different levels as you become, as your, you know, child becomes, moves through childhood and adulthood. So what he's saying is that everybody, there's a universal face to heroism, and we all face it, and we all have to go through all of, you know, this process internally and see the heroic stages within ourselves. And there are tons of ways that we have to do our own heroic journey, and that, and we are creating a heroic journey as we go, whether or not we know it. And so it's, a lot of it is the stories that we tell ourselves about what we're doing. When I was talking earlier about somebody, you know, seeing themselves as a victim and seeing that she had seven bad bosses, well, I can tell you what she did is every time she saw somebody, she would say, here's my story. My story is, I've had seven bad bosses, I've been really treated badly, da, da, da. It's like, you're creating your own story. Well, what the heroic journey is, it gives you the option of creating your journey in a different way. So you are seeing it from more of a heroic place. And when I say heroism, a lot of people kind of get a false impression of what heroism is, and they think of it as like, okay, kind of the macho image that we have, you know, sort of the Rambo, you know, Die Hard, you know, you go out, you know, you triumph over somebody, you do something. Actually, sometimes it can be very manipulative. You know, you do something or there's a vengeance behind it, and then you get back at somebody and you triumph over other people. Well, my perception is that true heroism is an inside job. It's something that we all have to do, we all go through, but it's an inside job, and we move through thousands of personal blunders in our effort to figure out what is the right decision. You know how a lot of times you learn from negativity? You learn, oh, I don't want to do this, and I don't know if some of you have gone through other, you know, many different jobs, or you've made job changes, you made maybe what you thought was a wrong decision. But if you learn from the process and say, no, what that taught me was is what I don't want to do. So you can do by process of elimination. If you know what you don't want to do, that helps get you closer to what you do want to do. So it's constantly having to do sort of a course correction. And when we start out on the heroic journey, you can, oftentimes you make wild different decisions in your process to try to get clarity. And the closer you, you know, the longer you're on your heroic journey, the closer it is, you know, people even say sometimes it's like going through the eye of the needle. You know when you're off course because you're pretty centered and pretty calm and pretty grounded. And if something's off, it feels really off, off base. And you start really paying attention to yourself and how you're feeling internally as you go through. So Joseph Campbell had 13 stages to his heroic journey. I sort of distilled it down for my purposes in the workplace and applying it to the workplace to 10 different stages. And I've given you a handout on that. For those in the webinar, that handout is there. There's another handout that I hope will be available for you that will also be a summary of all of those stages. But the stages of the heroic journey, if you'll see on what I have on this PowerPoint presentation, you'll see it's going in a counterclockwise. And I did that purposefully because we, in our logical world, in our day-to-day world, we sort of work in clockwise. Everything's moving forward in a clockwise fashion. The heroic journey is kind of it's a non-linear process. It's not something that, even though I've shown these in various stages as numeric stages, that's to help you understand it, but it may not be always in that order internally. So even though I'm saying these to you as the stages you can go through, you may jump around internally as you're dealing with different things. So if you can kind of, as we're going through these stages, to think about it different, you know, like, oh, okay, I've experienced that. You might say, well, that seemed out of order. It's okay because we're not linear beings internally. There's the non-linear side of us that we have to attend to. And this is what's so good about this heroic journey is it helps you deal with that non-linear side, but bring it to conscious awareness. And so the first stage is the call to adventure. And that is where your old familiar self is challenged in some way, has to look at things differently. You know that you're called out to do something different in the direction in your life. And that can be sometimes an internal calling out, like you get this really strong feeling that you need to make some kind of change in your life. You need to change jobs. You need to say something to somebody that you may have not been willing to say. I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll get like this, and I say, I really need to talk to somebody about that. And if I don't talk to them, it's like that nagging voice in there gets louder and louder and louder and won't let you off the hook. Well, that also can be a little call to adventure. A bigger call to adventure can be if you're called to change jobs, change fields. I'll use myself as an example. When I was working at the Texas Attorney General's office years ago, and I knew I needed to make some change, and I wasn't sure what I needed to do. And I was out for a walk, and I said, what do I need to do? I was asking myself, and I very clearly felt like I heard an internal message that said, quit your job, travel, and move to Seattle. And I was kind of like, what? You know, there was this stunned part of me that's going like, what? I don't know where that's coming from, because it didn't come from my logical mind. It came from what I call the logic of the heart, a place within you that is calling you to do something different. That's one example of a call to adventure. Another example of an external call to adventure, I was just talking to my sister a few days ago, and she was telling me that my nephew had been offered a supervisory position with the company that he's at. And he first said to them, no, I'm too young, I'm not ready for supervision. And he went and he talked to his father, and his father said, no, you need to do this position. He said, maybe I do, maybe I need to take it. But he went through that. There was something that called out externally to change direction. He was just minding his own business, going through. He wasn't planning on it. It came. Another example would be somebody getting laid off from a job. You know, how many times have people, you know, felt this total pressure that they, you know, it's like, oh, my gosh, I'm getting laid off from a job. Now it's this whole other place I have to step into, and it's stepping into the unknown. So if you look at it as a heroic journey, sometimes when, you know, if you get into a layoff situation, I've been in that myself, I was able to say, oh, kind of look at it with excitement. It's like, what's coming next? Having that mentality of what's coming next and an excitement about it, almost like where it takes your breath away, can give you a very different sense of moving into that next phase than being totally scared by it. And I'm not saying you won't get scared, because sometimes what comes next is that refusal. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. This is where your fear and resistance comes up. You start saying, I can't change fields. You know, somebody saying, I really feel like I need to change from, you know, being a chiropractor to being a teacher. You know, it's like, okay, well, I can't do that because I have a certain income level. My family's depending on me. I got kids going to college. I've got all these things I've got to do. I can't possibly do what I'm called to do. I had that with me when I, you know, it's like, quit my job. It's like, what? I've got 8.5 years, and I vest at 10 years. How stupid is that? But I kept getting that call. I needed to go. I needed to leave. And after I did, then I was able to look back at it and see why it was wise for me to do it. But at the time, when I'm going through the refusal process, the value of the refusal process is that it helps you to get synchronized so that all aspects of yourself are in agreement that you will, that you need to move forward and go a certain way. And so that's how it can really, it can be very painful, though, to kind of have to do a lot of introspection, a lot of, you know, gnashing through things, figuring out details of how, what you've got to do to make things become a reality or change things in a new way. But it's very, it can sometimes be a very good teacher to you in moving forward, because you once you do get what you need to do and you feel very clear about it, then it makes you able to move to that next stage, which is the acceptance. You come to sort of an internal sense of peace about it, where you're in agreement that, you know, the outer, your outer self and your inner self are really, you know, not fighting or not at odds about things. You feel, sometimes I notice people have said to me, I can breathe easier now. I can sleep better at night. I don't have these sleepless nights. I had somebody who told me that he was called to move to another city, and until he did it, he kept having these anxiety attacks, and he just couldn't make a decision, and he couldn't do it. And finally, when he said, okay, I'll move, that night he slept well for the first time in his life, where he had just, like, totally slept deeply. So that's, you know, right there, even when seeing that you have moved through that, it helps you know that it's like, oh, okay, I've got this sense of peace. I've moved on to the acceptance stage. Now, after that acceptance stage, then oftentimes what comes is you start to cross the threshold where you're going from the old way of being to the new way of being. And then there's sometimes when in mythology, they talk about the ogres at the door, or there'd be tests of some kind that challenge you. Like, for instance, you take a new job. You get into that new job, and suddenly you have to do things in a different way. Maybe it's stuff that you don't know how to do, so you're back to being a beginner again, whereas before you were maybe feeling very competent. Now you start feeling incompetent for a while until you kind of get to know what you're doing, and that can be kind of stressful. Or you have to deal with certain people in a different way that you didn't, it's like, oh, this wasn't what I thought I was bargaining for. I didn't know I was getting, you know, I didn't know that this is the kind of person I was going to be dealing with. And so it offers you a challenge. How are you going to face that new situation? Or sometimes maybe in a job interview, you were told one thing and then you get in and it's something totally different. Has anybody encountered that? It sometimes can be a very big challenge when you have to go into a situation that you didn't really think you agreed to. And you're saying, wait a minute, this wasn't the deal. This isn't what I agreed to do. And if you can sometimes get through your own resistance to say, wait a minute, is there a way that this is really serving me to do something in a different way, to see things in a different way, to learn a new skill set that I didn't know I even needed for the next phase in my journey, but maybe I do. You know, maybe it's something that's really going to be valuable to me. It can help you move through that and not feel so, you know, resistant to it. The other thing is that you may have to really trust yourself as you go through this process, because it's almost like there's a, it's a challenge to see if you're going to go and go back to your old ways. And I've been in a job situations where they gave you, if you moved to a different department, they gave you 90 days to make a decision if that was a right fit and you could go back to where you were. I don't know if they've got that at UCSD or not. But at any rate, I thought it was kind of an interesting concept for everybody involved. But it's like I've seen that happen where people step in, they try it, they say, no, no, that's not it. But oftentimes what that is the person didn't actually just give themselves that extra time period to get through the transition, and they just retreated to an old way of being. And at some level, it can be comforting because you go back to the old way, but I think there's always a part of you that wondered if you could make that, could step up to the challenge, because you know you didn't quite really meet up to the challenge, and this helps you to actually deal with it and move on through it. Now, the next stage, is stage five, is meeting the allies, and this is when you come in contact with people who can help you to move through and learn what you need to learn. Like, I remember being in one job where I had another person take me under his wing and just kind of first few weeks kind of showed me the ropes, told me, you know, here's where the copy machine is, here's the code you need, here's where the restrooms are, here's how the challenges that you'll have in dealing with this kind of bureaucracy or this kind of situation. And he just really took me under his wing and helped me out a lot. It was really invaluable, so I didn't have to learn that all myself. Sometimes you have to learn that yourself, and you don't have anybody to help you, and that can also be a value in and of itself, because then you have to rely on internal resources. Maybe you step into a place where you're working by yourself, and suddenly, where you've before had a lot of people that have been around you, you've had now you have to rely on yourself, and there's nobody there to check with. And you now suddenly have to say, okay, now what do I do? And you have to say to yourself, is this the thing I need to do next? What do I need to do? And your self-reliance is your internal ally that needs to be grown during this process. So allies encourage can tell us the truth sometimes when we need to hear things. I know sometimes I've had that where, you know, like how many of you have done 360-degree feedback where it will give you feedback from people who are your peers, people who you may supervise, people who supervise you. It gives you a 360-degree look at yourself from different people's perspective. That can be a very helpful tool sometimes, and I see that as sort of a tool of allies who will tell you the truth when you need to hear it. And maybe sometimes it's hard to break through into your, you know, saying, oh, no, I'm not really like that. But if you get enough people around you saying you are a certain way, well, maybe I don't feel that way internally, but maybe I'm acting that way externally and I need to look at my own behavior. And so that can be a very helpful thing for you to do by having somebody who's willing to tell you the truth and be able to help work it through. The allies help encourage us so that we have the strength of character to take on the next phase of our challenge. Next phase is the trials. And this is the part that I hate the most, I have to say. Even though I've gone through it in other many places, I can't say this has necessarily been the fun part for me. It's been some of the most valuable experience. But this is where you can be sometimes totally overwhelmed. You feel like it goes on forever. It's like, when am I ever going to get out of this horrible place? Has anybody ever had experienced something like that where you felt like, yeah, it's just like, oh my gosh, this is never ending. And it's if you realize that this is part of that this is a part that is a phase and a stage of your heroic journey that you're moving through, then you can ask yourself different questions. Because you can ask yourself, okay, what is it I need to really learn here? Because I've noticed before sometimes, like, I feel like, wait a minute, this is kind of deja vu all over again. I feel like I'm learning the same things over again, and I'm not really making any movement. What do I really need to do to break through to get the learning experience from this so I can move on? And if you look at it as sort of like a batter in baseball needs to go back to the batting cage for batting practice continually to better their batting ability, it's not really a value judgment about, oh, they're a bad batter. It's about they need to continually hone their skills. And I think if we sometimes, you know, sometimes we can get into a victim situation, like, oh, gosh, I'm having to go through this, slog through this horrible stuff. And I can't say I haven't done that when, you know, moan to friends about, I'm so ready to move from this place and blah, 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 you know, kind of whine about it. But if you start to really think about it in a different way so that you say, okay, I'm encountering the same thing. I'm kind of slogging through it. What else do I need to learn? What else do I need to learn? And keep opening yourself to new learning. It can really change your whole focus about what this time period is. Sometimes it's that you need to synthesize information in a new way. You need to think about things differently. You need to get better awareness about what's going on around you. Sometimes people say, well, I don't want to. These people just really bug me. I just want to focus on my job. That just makes me laugh when I hear that, because how much of the job is about the things you do versus the people you encounter and the interactions that you have with people? A lot of times, even the things that we say, well, I can't get this done because I'm waiting on so-and-so to do it, and so-and-so is a control freak, or so-and-so hasn't made a decision, or so-and-so, you know, hasn't met with the right people, or whatever it is, it's all still part of the process. It's a lot of it is about dealing with people. So a lot of this is honing your people skills and realizing sometimes that the job that we think that we're doing is not necessarily about the physical work that we are that's on paper for what our job description is, but it's the people interactions that we're having and the organizational challenges that we're helping to solve that are actually what is part of our trials process. So that can really be a helpful thing to know that, because this is actually where I say kind of the metamorphosis of spirit occurs, where you kind of, you know, it's kind of like in a the butterfly to cocoon, the cocoon to butterfly. You know, when it goes through that cocoon process, it's sort of mushy. And if you opened the cocoon at the wrong time, it would kill it because it's all mushy inside. But if you leave it long enough, it can go through, and then it becomes a butterfly at the end. This is sort of the mushy phase for our own journey. It's where we may not have real clarity about where we need to go and where we're going, but it can help us actually move to that next phase if we really go through it effectively. And then we get to what I call the respite. And that is where suddenly you start to, and it may be either suddenly or it may be over time, you start to realize, wait a minute, I'm not having all those horrible challenges the way I thought I was having for so long. Or my mood is starting to lighten in some way, or I feel a sense of clarity that I didn't have before, and I don't feel like everything's so hard and stressful and challenging. And it just starts to feel lighter. And this can be a really helpful place because then it gives you more of that internal space. It's what I had one boss who used to call it the stare at the wall time. He had us all build in to our contract stare at the wall time because he said he knew that to make good decisions, we needed to have time to think and to cogitate and to process and not just keep on just, you know, pounding at it and going forward. You had to have a little time to think. And this is also the time that I talk about the synchronicities, paying attention to synchronicities that come into your life. On a personal level, I know, for instance, if I go into a bookstore and a book falls off a shelf, I go over and I look at that book to see if there's a message for me. Because sometimes it may not be something that I'm thinking at a conscious level about, but it's like, oh, there's a title to the book. Or I don't know if you've ever been like, you've been saying to yourself, what's the answer to this? Give me a sign, you know, give me a sign. And then you'll sometimes get some sign that's maybe a very odd thing that you didn't think of. I'll use an example. I remember at one point thinking that I needed to make a decision on something about how I needed to approach things. And I thought, I don't know if I'm making the right decision. And then I came across a billboard that was while I was at a stoplight, and it said, "You go, girl." You know, and it was like, it was just kind of, but I kind of, it's like it kind of stood out to me. Nobody else would have thought anything of it, but it's like, oh, okay. You know, I kind of took that a little bit. Then I got another thing in the mail, like a flyer in the mail that was talking exactly on point with the thing I was talking about doing. It's like another sign. You start looking, paying attention to those little signs. There are synchronicities, which are meaningful coincidences that might not mean anything else to someone else, but they mean something to you. I don't know if anybody saw a Steve Martin movie, All of Me. It's Lily Tomlin, thank you. Yeah, it was Lily Tomlin, it's like this, she's in his body, I mean, it's like this whole out-of-body kind of experience, but he's not wanting to believe that she's, that she's the person that she's saying that she is, and so he's saying, he's kind of walking around, he's saying, give me a sign, give me a sign, and on the wall behind him, like the clock is going backwards and falling off the wall, and he's like looking down, and he's not paying attention. All these things kept happening around him that are giving him signs, and he's not paying attention to it. So sometimes those things, if we start paying attention to those little details, or one example that I have that was just still kind of is amazing to me, I was saying to myself that I needed to, when I was writing my dissertation, it's like I was writing something about quantum physics, and I thought, well, why is it that I'm dealing with quantum physics right now with all this other stuff? That's something extraneous. And so I kept saying, I need to have somebody who is a plasma physicist to talk to, but where am I going to find a plasma physicist? So I was sitting in line at a class I was taking and was talking to somebody, and I was talking about where she worked, and she said where she worked. And I said, well, I used to work there too. And I said, what do you do for them? And she says, I'm a plasma physicist. Just nearly blew me away. I couldn't believe it. So I started picking her brain about the very thing that I had been saying I wanted to talk to. How could I have gone out and said, okay, now this person in line is going to be the plasma physicist? No way. But because I was open to it and listening and paying attention, I was able to get the information I needed and get some really valuable things that helped me on the next phase of my journey. And it sometimes can be a very subjective connection. So, you know, if you say it to somebody else, they might go, huh? They might think that's really weird. But it means something to you, and that's really what counts, because it's the meaning that we put into things that makes the difference in how we feel about where we're working and what we're doing and how we're evolving in life. So next stage is the magic flight, and that's where we start feeling like the end is near. We've kind of struggling against all odds. It's like we've kind of, you know, got some breathing space. We're like baby birds in the wind, you know, getting ready to spread our wings and take flight. And yet there's some trepidation sometimes because we haven't actually tested ourselves in the real world. We don't know, you know, something, we're doing something different. We don't know how it's really going to be. We may feel a little self-conscious about it. We may not know, you know, we may say, well, you know, I think that I'm different. I think I'm different, but am I really, I'm not really tested in the world. Am I going to be able to respond to things differently? So we may be either afraid of the future a little bit because, you know, we still don't know we're going to bridge that next gap. And we also may be uncomfortable with where we're going, you know, like the success. You know, we suddenly start seeing ourselves successful. It's everything we've been working for, and it's like, that's not okay, because we've been taught in our society sometimes that, you know, if you get too used to it, then it's going to be taken away from you, or you're not going to have it. It's not going to be sustainable. And so it's like, I can't have it. It might be too good. You know, maybe our life is going to be too perfect, too wonderful. And we start kind of backtracking from it and doubting ourselves and questioning ourselves. Or we might be overly concerned with what other people are going to think. I know when I first started doing this internal work and started articulating it to other people, I thought, is this something I can really talk about to other people? And as I started feeling more comfortable and more confident internally, then I started having conversations with people who started challenging me and saying, well, what about this? What about that? And I was able to say to them, oh, okay, well, here's what's my perception about this. It made me feel more confident so then I could move forward. And then that takes you to the next stage, which is the triumphant return. And that's when you re-enter from the outer world and you're in a different state. It's sort of like you're in some ways, in parallel universes. You'll be walking around in the same place with everybody else in the workplace. You'll be working side by side with people, and they're just like, you know, wringing their hands and saying, ain't it awful, and just like having a hard time and dealing with the difficulty, and you're kind of very peaceful, and you're listening to them, and you're really attentive to it, but you're also realizing you're coming from a different place because you have gone through a process within yourself that has given you clarity and wisdom that other people don't have around you. And I had made the mistake in the beginning of thinking that everybody would instantly, as soon as I got that information, other people would instantly kind of get it. So I was, you know, going up to family members and friends and saying, I got it, I got it, I got it. You know, it's like, here's what you have to do. And they're kind of like, huh? You know, people didn't understand because they hadn't gone through that process themselves. So sometimes you may encounter people when you start to say things or act differently in a workplace, people may not get it. They may not understand. And also, there's lots of people, let's face it, that say one thing and really do something else. They don't walk their talk. Anybody else worked with someone who doesn't walk their talk? Yeah. So this is a way we have to actually walk our talk. This is where we have moved from the stage of magic flight where we think we can do it and this is where we build our confidence that we actually are different people, that we respond to the world in a different way, that we think about things differently, that we can articulate it in a new way. If, as a change agent, and everybody is a change agent at any point in an organization, we are all change agents if we choose to take that on, we see how we can make a change. I oftentimes will hear people say, well, that's somebody else's job to make those decisions as leaders. I'm not a leader in the organization. I can't make that change. I can't do anything about it. Well, there's always something that you can do. You know, I look around me when I've been in organizations and say, how is it that I can get things ready for this next phase, even when we're in the midst of flux? What is it that I need to do? And this is a way you can start doing that. You're challenged to retain your wisdom and really make different decisions and do things differently, even when other people around you don't get it, or they're jealous of you, or they're just don't understand what you are, or what you're doing, or they're still in a very fearful or anguished place. In the last stage of the journey, is the master of two worlds. And this is where you get to a place where you feel like you've graduated in some way. This is a place sometimes that actually people sometimes will do little internal ceremonies for themselves. I know when I finished writing, you know, my first book, you know, I went out and I celebrated, because if you don't celebrate those things and do sort of little rituals with yourself, you do yourself a great disservice. You know, it's like, okay, now move on to the next thing. You don't enjoy the success that you have. You don't, you know, do the things that are really, make it really valuable to you. So it's sort of like giving yourself a sense that you've gotten a sense of some completion, you're able to move to the next place, but you do it with a greater level of wanting to share what you've learned with humanity in a different way. And so you're taking it to the next level by serving society. And this is where it can be very valuable in giving back to people and knowing that it's not just about you individually, but it's how you serve people in a greater way, how your work, anything that you're doing, is doing greater service. And I was thinking about a time when I was working in an organization where there was someone whose job was to do janitorial work. And other people would be grousing about their work, and he would be going about his day smiling and having a great time, and he would say hi to everybody, and he would go up and give people hugs. And he was the person who just spread sunshine all over. And, you know, I often kidded with him, saying, yeah, you're not, you know, you're doing this little, you know, this job for emptying the trash, and what you're really doing is spreading sunshine around the whole department. And he just kind of laughed. He's kind of like, yeah, you kind of figured out what I was doing, you know, what I'm all about. And I think sometimes, no matter what we're doing, even if we can sometimes feel like, oh, what I'm doing is like I don't like it, I'm not doing what I like to do, it can be of great value in your life. And it also is helping other people, it's helping the organization, and it's all about your own mindset and what you think of it as to how it is and how you're perceiving it. So then the importance of completing all these stages is figuring out, is you get this sense of looking at your life as a heroic epic. It's like, you know, I one of the exercises that I'll have people do sometimes is to look at their life as if they're at the end of their life writing a book about themselves and say, what was my life like and how did each step that I was doing contribute to my heroic journey? And you can actually do this at home if you want as an exercise to say, okay, where I'm working right now, maybe something, is there something I need to learn that's helping me become the person I'm going to be? At the end of your life, you're able to look back from that place of wisdom and see who you became and be proud of yourself. So you can then say, okay, well, what is it I really need to work through that's a challenge? Maybe I've been resisting that challenge. Maybe I haven't really wanted to step up and do the next thing I need to do. But if you look at it as a heroic epic, you can do that now while you're actually in the place where you are. Be your own observer of your actions and your thoughts and the way that you deal with people, and see where there's a disconnect between your internal perception and your external behavior. It can help you meld the two and become really more comfortable about being authentically who you are in the workplace, no matter where you are. You know, I see a lot of people kind of what I call a compartmentalization syndrome. They're one way at work. They say they're another way at home. They're another way in their social life. And they have a real disconnect between all of those. Well, the heroic journey is about really kind of dissolving all those walls that we have artificially built that create a persona for ourselves and just become authentically ourselves and wherever we are. So there's not like you're one person to one, you know, in one setting and another person in another way. You just feel like you are who you are and you feel very proud of it and confident. And in this process, even though I've designated it as a circle, it's really more like a spiral, because as you're closing one chapter, you're opening a new chapter in your heroic journey. And you don't know necessarily how that's going to come about in advance, but you can kind of go with it and say, oh, okay, now I'm opening a new chapter, and I guess I've got a new heroic journey that I've started on, and go with that in a new direction. And then the organization has a collective journey. I kind of mentioned that a little earlier. If you look at your own heroic journey, and each person's got their own heroic journey, and then in the center is the collective journey of the whole organization, whether that's maybe your internal work group or the organization, maybe UCSD as a whole. I've done this process in another phase where you work with work with your work teams so that each person figures out what their strengths are that they bring to the team and tries to really align their strengths. So that then they say, okay, what is it that we are collectively doing? You know what the mission of the organization is. And then you collectively kind of match up. It's like, okay, well, here's my skill set. Well, here's some things I really don't like to do. That, you know, you look at where your strengths are and where other people's strengths are. And then there's always some things where, you know, kind of nobody really likes to do those things. You have to kind of pick up the slack. But if you start really matching it, where is the best fit for everybody in the organization? And how are the ways that we are change agents in an organization, how are we doing this effectively? It can help you to figure out the organization's quest to discover their core values and their mission as an organization, how it works together with the individual journey. And this is where it comes down to, what is organizational transformation? Well, this is kind of, I see lots of organizations going through this right now, and you know, I'm sure that you're going through organization and reorganization. Is anybody going through reorganization again? I mean, I know that earlier comment, you've got people coming in. There's always things, you know, they're always moving the boxes around, moving things around in organizations. Each new person that comes in wants to redefine that. Well, if you look at it as nobody knows the future of the organization, but that future is sort of in the center, that we're all kind of collectively creating. It's sort of we're all giving our juices. We're all, you know, putting it in this pot that's sort of, you know, it's a dynamic process. And as we do that, then we are starting to see what is emerging from that collective whole. That's what the challenge is in going into the workplace. And whether or not you've got other people around you who know that, if you do, that's great, because then you can work on it together. If you don't, then you can still contribute by saying, how can I be a catalyst in that organization, in this organization, to make a change for the better? How can I personally make a difference in what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis to better the organization as well as myself? And, you know, the successful organization really does need change agents at every level, like I was saying earlier. It's not enough to just sort of kind of point the blame to other people or say they need to figure it out or they need to do, I put it in quotes, they need to do something differently. If you find yourself ever saying that, you might say instead, what do I need to do differently? What do I need to do that makes a change for the better? And if you're dedicated to your individual contribution, your individual gifts, and then also seeing that in other people and articulating it to them, well, you know, I think you're really great at such and such. You know, a lot of times people don't hear that or they don't see it in themselves. If you start saying that to other people in your work group, how does that change the whole dynamic of the people you're working with when you start seeing the positive and the things that are working right in the organization? Because we're so focused on problems, and we do need to deal with problems. But if we look at it as what can we collectively do that's going to make us go from good to great, that's a real challenge for an organization to say, what do we do next? Because it's a collective thing that you can't know for sure unless you get everybody's input. So if you withhold and say, well, I'm going to wait until somebody else makes a first move, then you may miss an opportunity. It may be missing that very window of action that really makes everybody think differently about a situation. So the collective action is what you do in spite of people who are going to be your naysayers. And in any organization, a lot of times you'll have people who think that their job is to point out what's wrong with the organization. Does anybody work with somebody like that? Yes. Yes. I'd like to. Can be very challenging to deal with this person. A lot of times we'll spend a lot of energy trying to get that person to come around, or they end up being a very loud voice in the organization, because they're one loud voice instead of other people being able to contribute. Well, a lot of times what you have to do, if you're looking at it as a heroic journey and you can start articulating that in your organization, is to say, yes, you're right, there are some challenges. And the person who is a naysayer is bringing out, they're helping be sort of at the refusal stage. And they're helping bring out and making you articulate what needs to happen sometimes, or the shadow side of what are the fears that everybody has collectively. And they're sort of articulating that. But you sometimes have to just go on and move and do things, and then they come along, sometimes dragging and screaming, or sometimes maybe they eventually come around. But they will, you know, eventually the organization as a whole moves forward. And either that naysayer keeps on being the naysayer in the organization, or sometimes they don't fit anymore and they move out. You know, I mean, things change. And I know in one place I was, we're just so sure that this one person was like gum on the bottom of our shoe. They were never going to leave. And, you know, as soon as the collective group started making other decisions, what do you know? It's like it wasn't a fit for them anymore. It's almost like it became like fingernails on the chalkboard, because people were so positive. It was like, I can't take it. This organization's too positive. And they got out and went somewhere else where they could be a naysayer and feel very happy and content. So, you know, it's the collective action, though, taking action despite what we are, you know, hearing around us is really what's called for, because if we attend to the person who is always, you know, the person who's saying no, then we don't ever make the decisions to help us move forward. So some of the traits that we have to make us more effective as change agents: we have to be comfortable with ambiguity, because that's what it's all about, ambiguity. You know, we don't know what it's going to be. So if you're somebody who's got to have, you know, a lot of control, you might want to go live in a box somewhere, because you're really going to have a difficulty living in this world in the dynamic flow of what we have going on and still be able to function effectively. If you're a good change agent, you'll be comfortable with the ambiguity, at least enough that you're saying being open to the possibilities and looking for possibilities. And as I was saying earlier, the calm in the midst of chaos, focused on action, so that when others freeze and can't take action or can't make decisions, you're one of those people who can calmly move forward and do what you need to do. I know there was somebody in our neighborhood who was a real calm person in the midst of disaster. You know, so when somebody was having, like, well, there was an earthquake up in Seattle, she was the type of person who was the calm person everybody went to. She was the one who had the first aid kit. She knew it. She had everything together. She had her list, her checklist, everything. She was always the one that was together that people counted on. You want to be that kind of person in your organization that can help be the person to help make that transition and help build the bridges by beginning to have things in place that you do that help people move to the new place, that you make processes clearer in the things that you do, that you put files in the organization that they need to be in so it makes it easier for everybody. Whatever you can do in your own way that helps focus the organization so that they, so you're taking action even if other people aren't, can really help the organization move forward. Now, the other thing about this is times of great change, like we are undergoing now, are times of great creativity. And oftentimes when you have a lot of money in an organization, or, you know, in, as we're seeing in the whole world right now, things are starting to pull in. We don't have the money to throw at things. So then that means you have to get more creative. And I think that's oftentimes one of the benefits of going through what can be sometimes perceived as a collapse of a system, of an old system, an old paradigm, is that you have to get creative. You have to think differently because you don't have the money to throw at things to make it be better and to kind of go away. You know, a lot of people will say, I remember somebody saying, but now I have to, you know, like their own house, and they realized that they had to file bankruptcy. And it's like, he was saying, well, I'm not going to have somebody to come and do my yard work anymore, and I'm not going to have somebody to do my pool. And I said, well, maybe you need the exercise. Maybe you need to be out in fresh air. Maybe it's good for you to be able to have contemplation time to go out and do that. I mean, you don't know yet because you haven't done it. But sometimes that in itself can be a very useful thing because it gives you more creative time to think, lets your creative juices start flowing. The other thing is being able to respond to people from both your head and your heart, because oftentimes we live in a very logically oriented, linear world, and the heroic journey calls us to be very heart-centered in our approach in looking at realizing that change can be very stressful and difficult for people, to know and recognize that that is a difficulty, it's a challenge for people, and how, you know, it's like when seeing somebody's going through great difficulty, to say, how can I help? How can I help you become a better person? How can I help you move through the change more effectively? How can I listen to you in a way that helps you come to terms with things? So it's a way to help you help other people. And then seeing everybody's contribution to the change process and embracing kind of both and thinking. It's not either or. It's not like good or bad, right or wrong. It's like there's always process that we're going through, and how can we look at things so that we are looking at your process has some good ideas and some common threads. Mine does too. Maybe they're not each individually exactly what we need to do, but maybe if we combine all of that together, it will put it together in a new way that's greater than the whole. And then just drawing out the resiliency in ourselves and other people that's going to be so valuable to what we do. And so I would challenge you to look at the actions that you take. What actions are you going to take that are going to help you on a personal level? By asking, what do you need to do to shift your mind, to change your perception about things? What actions do you need to take to do differently? And sometimes you need to think differently about something, and sometimes you need to act. And only you know internally what that is and when that's the truth. And as a work unit, it's how will you communicate more effectively with one another? There's always ways we can communicate more effectively. Unless we're inside someone else's head, we may think we're communicating clearly, and then what other people see, and it's like, how could they have thought that? And they're thinking to us, how could they have thought that? You know, that old thing of the what the engineer, I mean, what the person asked for a swing and what the engineer created was, you know, a swing set, you know, something totally different. It's just a very different thing than what it started out. So that communication is so key in keeping open channels. And so asking, how can we work together and communicate differently? What outmoded procedures are there that we need to do? What outmoded thinking process? If you have to think creatively, we've been thinking things are a certain way, but maybe we need to, like, think, mix up the Rubik's Cube, look at it in a totally different way. So start brainstorming on how you could, you know, just throw out things that seem totally outlandish, and maybe that lands you in a new place because you're thinking about it differently. And as an organization, you know, every organization has its own culture. Well, how is your culture going to be adaptive to change? I worked in one organization that was very resistant to change. They hated it. They resisted it at every turn. And they put the skids on it and nixed things all over the place. I worked in another organization that saw themselves as the innovators. We are the innovators in the industry. What's the difference in attitude that you bring to your job as a group, as a culture, when you think of yourself as working in a collaborative, in an innovative, collaborative organization? It's very different. So if you can start looking at how your culture needs to change where you are and helping as a change agent to help evolve it, that can help you a lot. And then demonstrate your own leadership. Like I was saying before, you can be a change agent at any level in the organization. So what do you need to do to lead? And oftentimes what we find is that we need to lead the leaders. Maybe leaders are not clear about what they need to do, and it takes somebody standing up to them and saying, you know, I know that this is what everybody's been saying to you, but I really need to tell you something, a different perspective. And I feel like this, that what I need to say, it may be not politically, may not seem politically wise to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. And sometimes that can make all the difference in an organization. I was just in a place recently where one person said, well, I know somebody said something very delicately, and what they're trying to say is, and they proceeded to say what it was, and the director said, don't be delicate with me. I want you to tell me the truth. I don't want people who are yes people. I want you to tell me the truth, because how are we going to collectively make a change? So be willing to be courageous and step up and do what you need to do so that you can make change in an organization. Now, I want to open it up to questions or comments or thoughts. Has anybody, as we're talking, have something that they thought, oh, that's something I can incorporate in or do differently where I'm working? No changes. No. Has anybody had any great ahas through this that they thought, oh, yeah, that may be a different way to think about it or to talk to somebody differently?
Mentioning serendipity and how, you know, like the book falling on the floor, and I thought, oh, I hope this workshop isn't happening because some great change is just on the horizon that I have to deal with, you know.
Yeah.
But there was something that you did say about referring to them, like, oh, mm-hmm. they have to fix them. There's something that the leadership in the division has to fix, and it made me think, well, maybe I need to put together a proposal and mm-hmm. try to get my view across, mm-hmm. and that's the way I need to approach it, mm-hmm. instead of waiting for them to make the change, and they may embrace it.
You know, what you bring up is such a great point, because I've talked to several people in because I do coaching too, and one of the things that I will coach people through is, you know, they say, well, I keep telling them they need to make this change, and I say, but have you made a specific proposal to them? And that's exactly one of the things. It's like, lay it out. Make it so clear and talk about, give them a business case of why it is so valuable that it will help save the organization money, time, it will save steps in a process, it will make better communication between departments, whatever it is. If you come, it's such a different thing for you to come forth with, this is what I recommend, versus just saying somebody else needs to figure it out. You know, I actually, I had someone who worked for me at one point. She was one of the most valuable employees I ever had when I was a supervisor, because I would kind of tell her what I thought needed to happen. She would go off and not only do what I asked her to do, but she would create a whole system. And she would say, I think the system would really work, and I think that we can use it at the city level. We could, in fact, we could have actually ask the city clerk's office to change their whole process and make it make it be what we've got. I looked at it. It was brilliant. So I would take her, you know, we took her, we went to the clerk's office. We talked to the city clerk. They said, this is great. We're going to start using this as our model for the whole city. One person who was an administrative assistant made a huge change that saved the city thousands and thousands of dollars and people hours, because she was willing to put the whole plan together herself and put it forth and then go do it and implement it, and made huge change in the process. So that's why I say at any level you can do it, where it's just, it can make such a difference in an organization. Yes?
One of the important contributions of your presentation is that leadership doesn't always come just from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And vision also.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. I think a lot of times we think that leadership is just the people at the top. And oftentimes, though, if leaders are really being wise leaders, they will turn, you know, it's like, you know, when the triangle's kind of right side up, where you've got people at the top, but that would be where the vision is. The vision lies, leaders are charged with keeping the vision and making sure that that vision gets implemented through an organization. But if leaders turn it, the triangle upside down for implementation, it can help them to see, and this is like the servant leadership model of leadership, where you realize that the people who are the frontline people who are dealing with things on a day-in, day-out basis know best how things need to be. And so they will go to the people to ask them to implement. But oftentimes you work in a situation where people who are in a leadership capacity don't know that. They're not aware of that, or they don't think that that's what their role is. And so sometimes you will have to be a leader in that organization and be a leader, and it's almost like lead up and lead across and lead down, so that you are radiating out leadership. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, actually in a lot of ways, I think we get too stuck in role titles instead of looking at change agency is anything that anyone can do. That's a great point. Anything else? Yes?
I think you may have addressed part of this already. You know, clearly, you don't want to be a naysayer. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a yes man.
Right.
And in order to be effective, you know, what kinds of things, besides having courage to talk about issues that may be a problem, mm-hmm. coming up with own plans, are there additional recommendations or tips toward being effective in that role?
Well, and I think a lot of it is for one thing, asking yourself internally. I mean, a lot of times you need to kind of sit with information yourself and say, what is it I need to either do differently or think differently? And there's, you know, sometimes what we have to do is just do a slight shift in our perception, and that can change our whole view of what's going on. I'll give you an example of that. When I first moved to Seattle after I left my job in Texas and moved to Seattle, I had a temporary job. And before I left my job in Texas, I'd been saying, you know, I just need a break. I need some rest. I need to not be thinking for a while. I need to not be the point person always thinking and being on point. I need to just rest. And so I got up to Seattle and I was working a temp job. What I was doing in the temp job working for Xerox was checking pages, legal documents against the copies that had been made. And part of me was going, oh my gosh, I can't believe what I've gotten myself into. I'm doing this mundane job. I've had something that was really meaningful to me before. What have I done to myself? You know, I've kind of been going through this whole internal negative self-talk. Oh my gosh, what have I done? Somewhere in there, I said to myself, you asked for to not have to think. Here's a job where you are not having to think and you are getting paid for it. I thought, oh my gosh. And I was getting paid to think, and I started thinking of it as working meditation. As I was flipping the pages, I was just like, I'm meditating. Oh my gosh, I'm getting paid to meditate. Where else can I be paid to meditate? And it shifted my entire mindset about that job from it being a negative thing to being something very valuable. And in that time, when I was thinking about it a little differently, it gave my mind, instead of having all this, you know, the monkey mind, the self-talk, negativity, I was able to have more peace and calm internally, and I was able to finally listen to that still small voice internally that was probably nagging at me underneath all the other chatter of telling me what I needed to do next. But until I could quiet my mind enough to know what to do next, I couldn't make a wise decision. So that's how it sort of served me, to not have to have an external, you know, person telling me or have to do anything externally. It was about being. My whole thing then, at that particular moment, was about learning how to be as a person. Instead of always being a human doing, I really did become a human being. And then when you are a human being who is choosing to do, it's a very different way of approaching life than being only a human doing. And we get so much, you know, about being productive. I'm not being productive. I'm not being productive. I'm not being productive. But if you give yourself time to think things through, it can sometimes make you more productive in the long run. And that's why when I had this boss that built in stare at the wall time, he recognized the value that had for not continually push. Because if we push all the time, then we sometimes miss the things that we need to really hear and pay attention to. You end up spending a lot more time. Like, I used to have these extensive to-do lists. At some point, I realized I didn't need to always have that extensive to-do list. I needed to get rid of the to-do list because what I needed to do was not even on that entire list. How are you going to know that if you don't stop and ask yourself internally what you need to do? So sometimes you can get rid of your entire to-do list by just shifting and going a different direction. I don't know if that addresses what you were talking about.
It was very helpful. Maybe also in an organizational context,
mm-hmm.
Are there some specific things to, you know, sort of in shifting an attitude of how to mm-hmm. help contribute to the organization?
Mm-hmm.
Is that maybe more?
How to help? You mean in conversation with people or how to talk to people differently? Is that what you're meaning?
Right. So mm-hmm. that you're not just pointing out what's wrong or just going along with change for the sake of
right.
going along with it,
mm-hmm.
to find effective ways of mm-hmm. being in that role in an organization.
One of the things I think is, can be really helpful, like one time I remember being in a customer service meeting where we were all coming together from different parts of the organization and challenged with improving customer service. And, of course, that had many different facets to it. And so we were saying, you know, it's like people were kind of putting in ideas, and we had all these list of ideas of things that people were doing. And I said, it seems like there's one thing that felt to me which was kind of missing, which was a strategic plan for moving forward. How were we going to make strategic and wise decisions, not just things on a checkoff list, but how do we actually make a determination about what are the things? You can't do everything. There's not enough time. How do you prioritize that so you make it clearer what decisions you need to make? And so one of the things that we did was we formed a committee that was specifically trying to come up with what a strategic plan was for our organization. Here's all this input that we've gotten. How do we make sense out of it and make it, how do we phase it in? You know, like phase one, phase two, phase three. So that's sometimes what you can do in working together. The other thing that was very helpful in helping us decide what needed to go in what phase is something that people may have worked with before in an organization, but I find very helpful. It's basically drawing a grid. You have a grid, and on your vertical axis, you have how valuable something is to the organization. And then on the horizontal axis, it's how much resources it's going to take, either time or people or money, and that goes along the bottom. When you're looking at your decision-making, in the first quadrant, you look at quadrant one is the top left, then you go top right is number two, bottom left is number three, and bottom right is number four. And so what you do is you kind of plot it out. It's like, okay, is this going to have a high impact to the organization? If it is, then it goes up higher. And is it something that we can do really quickly? Is it the low-hanging fruit? So then you say, oh, okay, that crosses. That gives clearly a phase one kind of item. It's like it's something that we really need to start. You know, maybe it's something you need to plan on, like we need to plan for some long change process. And it's something that's going to take a long time, but we really need to get it going now because it's going to take us a long time to implement it. You put that in quadrant two. In quadrant three, those are things that have a lower impact to the organization, but they'd be very easy to do. Okay, you may or may not do that. You kind of prioritize that as your number three category. If you have done your number ones and your number twos, then you get to your number threes. And number four, it's going to take a long time. It's low value to the organization. You mark it off. You never get to it. You start looking at the things that you've got on your to-do list personally and as an organization in terms of those kind of value, I mean, this kind of quadrant, and it can help you assess what you really need to do to move forward effectively. And if you do it as an individual, it can be helpful, but if you do it to, as a collective group, it can be even more helpful. Is that? Okay. Okay, well, thank you all very much. I really appreciate being here today and sharing this time with you. And if anybody is interested in signing up for my e-zine, which I have some information over here. And also, if you didn't pick up a, if you're here in the room, I have a free bookmark for you and some other materials over there, so you're welcome to them. And I also have books for sale. So those of you who have tuned in, thank you very much for being with me today, and I really appreciate being here.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate it. A warm applause for you.
Thanks.